This is for the men who never settle. The ones who believe only quitters end a game in a tie. The type of guys who choose the bar with the biggest TVs to overcompensate for theirs at home. This is the Lodge mentality. This is Twin Peaks.
So we get back to sports now, and we'll begin our Border Patrol Blitz. And we'll start off with Gabe DeArmond. Gabe, did the Mizzou-Auburn game create any discussion points at PowerMizzou.com on the message board?
No, it's been calm, mm-hmm. pretty dead. People have no feelings about that.
Right.
That was something.
So you've seen it all. Well, we thought we've seen it all.
I haven't seen that.
Right, and that's what I tell people, like, you know, as a Mizzou fan, you think, well, I've seen it all. Let me sit down and tell you about some of the devastating losses I've seen. And legitimately, I was pissed off, but I was also somewhat stunned. And I said, you know what? They did it. I've now seen something that I haven't seen before, a wide variety of things that happened, a series of unfortunate events that happened to lead Mizzou to lose that game that I still can't believe happened. And so there's several things we could start with, but it seems like the one thing that people keep talking about is Luther Burden. And, you know, what's the shuffling with the punt returners? Robert Griffin III, I will say, was borderline obsessed with mentioning every 5 minutes that Eli Drinkwitz needs to get the ball to Luther Burden. And then there's been talk that he was hurt, and then Eli Drinkwitz confirmed that. And so that Gary Barnett has warned, hey, that could end up being a distraction if you're so, you know, if everyone keeps talking about he needs to get the football and this and that and everything else. And it seems like it is. It was certainly a distraction for the freaking broadcast crew. What do you make of all this and where this is headed? Because there's been plenty of hand-wringing about the Luther Burden situation.
Yeah, I make that of all the things that I think are worthy of talking about coming out of that game, that's probably not at the top of the list, maybe not in the top three or four. Look, should there be an SEC game where he legitimately doesn't get an offensive touch? No, there probably shouldn't be. But there's a lot of things there. First of all, the whole injury situation is just weird to me. I mean, if he's hurt, he's hurt. And I'm not saying he's not hurt. I think he is hurt to some degree. But, you know, Drinkwood said, hey, he was supposed to just go out there and make a fair catch, but he was a competitor. But, well, I went back and watched every snap, and he was on the field for 10 or 11 snaps in the second half, and they threw to him twice. And I don't know what everybody's definition of hurt is, right? I think it's different for every individual and every team, but he's questionable this week. I don't really have any idea if he's going to play. If I had to take a guess, I'd say no, which kind of brings up the question of if he can't play this week, why could he play last week? And was he really able to play, or was he just a decoy? There's a bunch of stuff there. But his actual production, I went through and, look, we probably talked about it on your show because I said it about 1,000 times this summer. People have expectations for this kid before the season that just weren't realistic. I mean, everybody was thinking 1,000-yard season and this kid can change a program and this and that and this and that. I went through every true freshman receiver in Power 5 football plus Notre Dame. He has the second most touches, somewhere between second and fourth, I think fourth most all-purpose yards, and he's tied for the most touchdowns. So that's not a kid that's not getting a chance to touch the ball. Now, I understand K-State and Auburn, he didn't, you know, have as many opportunities in those games. Those are also better defenses, but college freshmen, even the really good ones, for the first time in their lives are on the field with other people that are just as good as they are. I don't know who all of Auburn's defensive backs are, but I promise they're highly rated kids. You know, whether that's four-star number 200 in the country or five-star number four in the country, I don't really know. But it's the first time Luther is playing kids every single week who are as good as he is. And look at Dominic Lovett last year. He had 26 catches for 173 yards. And at the end of the year, everybody was saying, well, that seemed kind of disappointing. He was out there a lot, but he didn't really do a lot. Now, all of a sudden, he's leading the SEC in receiving after 4 weeks. It doesn't just happen the day that he steps foot on campus necessarily. So there's that. And ultimately, my thing is this. I've decided I will write about Missouri football and Luther Burden, not Luther Burden and Missouri football, because this has become far too much of a one-man thing. and paying way too much attention to one kid and not the entire program. He can't fix this season or fix this program all by himself. It's ridiculous to think he could have. And, you know, this is people wonder, and I've wondered a lot, why do kids like this always seem to go to, like, six schools? Why are they always at Clemson, Oklahoma, Alabama, Ohio State, and Georgia? Well, part of the reason is because this doesn't happen when they go there. Because if Luther goes to Georgia, which was the other team in contention, and he has the same numbers he has right now, there's not a single story and there's not a freak out about, hey, what's wrong with Luther? It's because there's three more of those guys there. But just the level of focus and the level of expectation that was on this one kid. And look, I don't want to sound like I'm preaching. We're certainly partly to blame for it. We live streamed his announcement. We had 5,000 people watching. It was a big deal. We made money off of it. I admit to all that. But the level of focus that has been put on this kid over the team is unfair, really, to both of them.
And the problem is the team's not good enough because
– right. If they were scoring, right, this wouldn't be as big a deal. But, oh, by the way, also, whatever you are doing on offense is not working because they're very bad on offense.
Right, right. The game was there for them to take. You know, Brady Cook, I don't think is good enough to be an SEC quarterback, but he made that throw. I mean, Nate Pete had a great day up until dropping the football. But that you look now, you look at the schedule, and I am looking ahead. Without getting that win, I can't figure out a way that they're going to get to six wins and get to a bowl game and get to be what would be considered a good season. Now they play Georgia. The play calling to me leaves a lot to be desired. The offensive line's not good enough. Again, the quarterback situation, and so that's the other question everyone keeps bringing up. I can only assume that they're going to get pummeled by Georgia. Hopefully not.
Well, yeah.
That's just what it is, and it doesn't look promising. It do you think there is a point where they say, okay, we've seen what Brady Cook can do. We need to start thinking about who the quarterback's going to be next year. Let's make a move. Or do you think they'll just let Brady Cook take all the bumps and bruises with his offensive line and just try to get through this year with him?
I mean, I've said since preseason, if they're 2-4 coming back from Florida, I'd throw Sam Horn out there and see what happens. But that's just me. I don't see practice. You know, and coaches don't think that way, right? As fans and media, it's so easy to sit here and say, well, the season's not going anywhere, so let's start thinking about next year. Coaches don't do that. They don't quit on seasons. They don't give up before, you know, if Missouri's 3-8 going into Arkansas, they're still going to try to win the Arkansas game, especially because there's no reward for being really bad. You don't get the number one overall pick, so you might as well win as many games as you can. So I don't know what they're going to do with Horn, but, you know, you listed off all those problems, and the truth is the biggest reason they lost the Auburn game was, I think, their special teams. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, not just that Meavis missed the kick, but that was certainly a big part of it. But, I mean, they jumped off sides on two field goals. That shouldn't happen twice in a season, much less twice in a game.
No, that's like Stan Weber said earlier. That's a reflection of the coaching and being prepared and the discipline. And so the Bucs got to stop with the head coach. Okay, well, Georgia, I don't know. We're 28.5. I don't know what the line is now.
Yeah.
What can you reasonably expect or hope for? They're going to honor Gary Pinkel, so that's something to look forward to if you go into the game. You know, I don't know. I wish they would have honored him in a different game, but that's fine. What can you reasonably hope for if you're a Mizzou fan for this game on Saturday?
Well, we were talking earlier this week on one of the shows we do on our site about, like, what level of game would Georgia have to play for Missouri to win this game? I mean, obviously, if Georgia plays an A game, Georgia is going to win, because if they play an A game, they're going to beat every team in the country. So we came down to, like, somewhere between a C-minus and a D-plus effort out of Georgia gives Missouri a shot if Missouri plays well. I don't think this is going to be close, because Georgia sleepwalked through last week against Kent State. I'm sure Kirby Smart is hammering his kids. And, you know, I go back and forth on this. I mean, there's no shame in getting beat and losing badly to Georgia. But at the same time, this is a team in your conference and in your division. I mean, the talk this week among, at least in that locker room, should be, why not us? Weird things happen in this in this sport every single week. You know, what I don't want to see out of Eli Drinkwitz is what we saw last year against Georgia, which is coming out from the very first snap and just trying not to get beat by 70. I thought that was a turtle football game they played last year, where it was just hand the ball off, run the quarterback, maybe we can slow it down enough that they'll only beat us by 37, which is what happened. I mean, come out and take your shot. You know, play who you can play, who's healthy enough to play. Run your offense. Try to give fans something to be excited about. And if it means you get beat 64-3, so what? I don't see how that's really all that much worse than getting beat 43-6.
Yeah, it would be nice to have that approach. Why not us instead of why us? But that's how it always ends up. Hey, Gabe, thank you for the time. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, fellas. Have a good one.
All right, do we have our man John Kirby? All right, let's go to John Kirby from JayhawkSlant.com.
Kansas.
Hello, John. How are you?
Doing well, Steven. How you doing?
I'm doing better than Nate because Nate has been throwing a fit. He's only been here for 3 days of the week in town, and he's been very angry. He's been throwing things at me. And he demands satisfaction. He wants to know why Kansas isn't ranked in the top 25, and he wants you to answer that question now, please.
Well, Stephen, listen, okay, and I'm going to say what I believe, and I know KU fans won't like this answer, but it's history, okay? And when you look at Kansas and what they've been doing for the last 12 years, top 25 just doesn't probably jump out to a lot of voters. But I think, listen, they're sitting right on the edge of it at 26, okay? So if they can take care of business against Iowa State, I don't see there's any way that they're not in it. But I really think that's what it comes down to is when you look at the top 25, it is a traditional poll of teams that do well all the time. Here's what I ask, Stephen. Let's say they said, we're going to start the first poll week 3 or week 4. Where would Kansas be then? You know what I'm saying? Because when you start the top 25 the first week, it's all the traditional teams.
Right.
And the guys like a Kansas are always going to be near the bottom.
The truth is, I could not give a crap.
That's convenient.
Like, literally, it's an imagined thing of people's opinions. Who cares? The great thing about sports is it doesn't matter what anybody's opinion is. There's a scoreboard. You know, go win the game. And actually, if there is anything, if I do have an opinion about the poll, I'm glad they're not ranked, because my biggest fear about this Kansas team right now is that they're going to start to get fat and happy and read all their press clippings, because College Game Day is coming to town. Matt Leinart's talking about him. Ryan Leaf's talking about him. Everybody's loving the Jayhawks now because they're this wonderful story, which I'm glad about. And I don't think that Lance Leipold's the kind of coach is going to let these guys, you know, get too carried away with reading their own press clippings anyway. But if you did have a challenge with that, he's got some easy motivators. Hey, you're still an underdog this weekend. You're still not ranked. If anything, I think that's a good thing for the Jayhawks to use as motivation right now, John.
Yeah, Nate, the big thing that I take from being around the coaches and the players is that they really are. When you hear sometimes it's the cliche of, you know, we're taking this one game at a time, and you really, hey, are people really looking down the schedule and trying to figure out, you know, the wins or the players looking down? I don't think so. I do think that's one thing that Leipold has done, and his message to his staff and his players has been very strong, is the most important game on this schedule is Iowa State, and they don't care about TCU, and they don't care about going on the road to Oklahoma and Baylor. Hey, we'll worry about those things when they come. And these guys are very grounded. I will tell you, it's probably been one of the most impressive things about being around them. You don't see – I mean, there's some excitement, but you see it's almost like they're saying, hey, it's great, we're 4-0, but we got to take care of business against Iowa State. So I just don't think you see a lot of looking ahead or getting ahead of themselves or starting to read their headlines.
Yeah, and you can see it. We talk to Lance Leipold every week. You can tell where it comes from. And to me, again, the opinion of an AP writer in Oregon right now or something like that doesn't matter to me at all. If I'm Kansas, the opinion that matters, your fans actually recognize what's going on. You know, they're turning out, because that's always been the thing about, you know, I've heard from the last three coaches, well, people got to come out and support us for us to win. No, you need to give them a reason to come out and support you. And this coaching staff and this team is doing that, and they got a huge crowd. In fact, I'm reading articles about fans are upset because the lines are too long at the concession stands, and they're having to deal with all that. That's a good problem to have right now, John, because they're probably going to have another phenomenal crowd tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm hearing it's going to be another good one. We'll have to see what the news today brings on whether it's going to be a sellout or not. You know, I did a story, Nate talked to Jason Booker, you know, on the concessions and things like that, and they've made a lot of improvements. I mean, they're listening to the fan base. They're doing what they can. You know, it's a stadium. It's an old stadium, and in the end, it's really not built to handle 47,000 people and get everybody through. So, you know, hopefully with stadium renovations that could come, hopefully maybe down the line in plans, those things will be addressed. But, you know, this administration, they're hustling and they're doing something every week to come back and try to help, you know, the lines in the concessions area.
So Iowa State is coming off a 7-point loss to Baylor. Nothing to be ashamed about that. Baylor can end up being the best team in the league. But how does Iowa State match up with Kansas?
Yeah, Stephen, something's got to give this weekend, right? I mean, you got Kansas, who's leading the Big 12 in scoring. You've got Iowa State, whose defense is number one and not giving up points in the conference. So something's going to give. There's a couple things I like for the Jayhawks this week. Number one is I listened to Matt Campbell's press conference, and he said Baylor gave them trouble with a lot of the motions and things they did because Iowa State still is an inexperienced defense. They lost a lot of players. And if Baylor gave Iowa State's defense trouble with what they do with motions, then they're going to have problems with KU because KU motions and gives you more looks and sets maybe than anybody in the country. So that's going to be something interesting to watch. And how Kansas' offensive line handles Iowa State's front. They got some good players. They're physical. So I think that's the matchup right there. I know, hey, is Kansas going to score 48 like they've been scoring? Probably not. But Iowa State's given up something like in the teens or something like that. And I know Kansas will score more than that. So I think that's probably the biggest matchup to me, Stephen, is Kansas' offense against Iowa State's defense.
If you want a perspective on how much Kansas has improved from last year to this year, and we'll see how the game plays out. When Kansas went to Iowa State last year, Stephen, they lost 59-7. This is a 3-point spread a year later, and obviously the quarterback situations are different for both teams, and that's a huge part of it. Brock Purdy's not there anymore at Iowa State. Jason Bean started last year for KU, and Jalen Daniels did not play in the game. Jalen Daniels is getting love for the Heisman candidacy now, John. And my personal feeling on that is, okay, he's off to a great start, and it's clear he's a very good quarterback. But being a very good quarterback and being a legit Heisman candidate are two different things. This is the type of game where all of a sudden, if he goes out and plays well in this one against the defense you're just talking about, then I start to think maybe he is really a Heisman candidate. I mean, how seriously should we take that part of what Jalen Daniels is doing? Is he really a Heisman candidate? Can we already really say that?
Well, Nate, right now through four games he is. I mean, when you look at the stats of everybody else in the country and what he's doing, he's absolutely a Heisman. The question is right now, would he be one, two, or three? Okay, but like you said, now you're starting to get into the teeth of conference play. Okay, you've got Iowa State, who's good defense, and Heacock's a really good defensive coordinator. They run that 3-3-5 defense, and they're going to give him a lot of looks, and they're going to try to play a little cat and mouse with him this week. Okay, then you got TCU, and then I think then when we start talking about Heisman and when does KU maybe start looking at doing a Heisman campaign or really officially start pumping him? I think you're going to have to wait to what happens when they go to Baylor and Oklahoma because those are two road games. And if he's doing anything remotely close to what he's doing now through these, then KU goes full bore into the Jalen Daniels Heisman campaign for sure.
What's the score going to be tomorrow in Lawrence?
You know, Stephen, I said this on our site that this has a feel to me of 2007. Where now I'm not saying KU's going to be in a BCS bowl game or anything like that. I'm just saying that every week back in 2007, the fans and everybody kept saying, oh, it's probably going to end this week, and they won. And then they had another tough game. Oh, you're probably not going to win this one. This one's going to be tough. And they kept winning. So I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to ride the momentum that they're on right now until they prove otherwise to me. Good crowd, could be a sellout. Beautiful day, homecoming. KU's got the momentum. I'm going Jayhawks 31, Iowa State 28.
All right, John Kirby, thanks for the time. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys, take care.
Now let's check in with Matt Walters.
Kansas State.
A little slow on that button there, Marco. All right? You need to parlay that a little bit better. Let's Hello, Matt. How are you?
Hey, be nice to my man, Marco. You can't hit every parlay.
That's
He's
right.
trying his best.
Well, he
Thank
can't
you,
hit, he can't hit any of them is the problem.
He's That's trying. Like, That's not for lack right. of trying, though. He's playing a lot of parlays.
But I can tell you this. Kansas State can win in Norman.
Yeah.
I asked Dan Weber that. How do you explain such great success playing in one of the most difficult environments to win in college football?
Well, I know Nate was slacking last week and wasn't a part of the show, but
right.
I told you nothing would surprise me that after losing to Tulane for K-State to go into Norman and win, there's something about that place that gets K-State dialed in. And when I went out to midfield for the coin toss, fellas, and K-State won the toss and elected to take the football, I wasn't surprised, but I thought, whoa, if they score right away, in case they eventually scored 14 early, you know, this thing could be pretty interesting. And the fact that K-State led 14-0 and didn't have a long stretch of bad football and didn't cough it up, I think last week K-State showed what it can be. The week before, it showed what it can be. And now I think the key for Chris Klieman's team is to find some consistency. But Adrian Martinez was active in the ground game and the passing game. And if that is the case a lot of Saturdays, K-State is going to be awfully difficult to beat.
So Adrian Martinez, of course, is the big story, right? Like the way he played the first three games, the comments that Chris Klieman made after the Tulane game, and then to go out and put up like a Heisman-worthy performance against Oklahoma. You're on the sidelines. What did you see as the biggest difference for that K-State offense down in Norman compared to what we saw the first 3 weeks of the season?
Well, I just think K-State made the determination that they just functioned at a much higher level because of that. You know, we can say that the reins were taken off, and in a lot of respects, that's accurate. I thought Adrian Martinez and Colin Klein were on the same page throughout the game. I thought the offensive line blocking was infinitely better than it was against Tulane. I thought those guys not just hung in there, but opened up some things. And, you know, when Martinez would get shut down for a little bit, then Vaughn was popping runs. And when Vaughn would get shut down, then Martinez was popping runs. And to me, the one thing that really stands out was the first long run early that Martinez had, because right in front of me, he got popped. And I mean, he got lathered by about three Sooners and was wincing in pain. It was a rough hit. And he got up, just kind of smiled and went right back to the huddle. And again, you really hadn't seen that, but I think the confidence level just kept building and building as that ball game went along.
All right, let's talk about this next matchup, Texas Tech coming off a win against Texas. What do you see from Texas Tech, and how do you think this game plays out in Manhattan?
I see a team that is very well coached. I think Joey McGuire has made a big difference. I think what Texas Tech has to prove now, and they've had to do this for some time, is can they win away from Lubbock? Lubbock is a tough place to play when the tortillas are flying. And again, it's not the easiest place for opponents to go into. But, you know, I mentioned consistency for K-State. Can Texas Tech play that kind of ball game and ball games on the road and be a factor in the conference? A better team, more athletic. They've got I like some things that they do on the defensive side of the football, but you know, for me, it's you got to do it away from your home barn, and we'll see if Texas Tech's able to do that tomorrow.
100 plays in a game. They've done it twice, and I know K-State did a little tempo. You got your cardio ready, Mayor Matt? Be running up and down the sidelines. How high-paced do you think this game's going to be?
I think if Marco is listening intently, I think the over-under on total plays is going to be 165.
Oh.
So I would take the over on that, Marco, just a thought. But, I may bring a little oxygen tank down there, borrow that from a friend or something. But I like those games, and I think, you know, I think K-State's depth defensively – can really, really help it tomorrow. And I think they'll be physical with Texas Tech. And I think it's going to be a fun game, like you guys were saying. It's going to be great weather. And I think after beating Oklahoma, I think the K-State Nation is going to be pretty pumped for tomorrow's ball game.
Tell you what, Matt, I'll look at that over-under for total plays. But if DraftKings puts half a touchdown as a line for Adrian Martinez rushing touchdowns tomorrow, I'm hammering the over like I did last week against Oklahoma. That's just disrespectful to the quarterback.
Oh, Marco, all I can tell you, man, is just hang in there.
That's all he can do, yeah. Matt. Thank you.
When you're working with these two guys, Marco, you just gotta show up, bring your hard hat and lunch pail, and just go to work.
That's exactly what we told him when we hired him. Matt, thank you for the time, and we will talk to you next week.
Have a great weekend, boys.
Thank you so much, Matt Walters, helping us preview K-State and Texas Tech. Those are two good games for, Kansas hosting Iowa State, Kansas State hosting Texas Tech, you know, then Mizzou and Georgia. But again, they will be honoring Gary Pinkle. So that's why you go to that game. You circle that. And
remarkable.
And then you try to capture him as he leaves the field and make him coach.
You can't do that.
Block him. You're not going anywhere. So try to get off the field.
Please coach our team.
Just kneel down. Here's the headset on. I beg of you. No. Hey, you know what? That's why they play the game.
That's right.
But that's like, you know, like what freaking Gabe said. Can they just go out there and give it a go? I mean, does this have to be 54-3 or something stupid? Nah, whatever. We'll see. Anything can happen. It is football, after all. Back after this on WHB. Welcome back. This is the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us. Boy, Marco had an interesting preview that he just gave us of the Aquinas Rockers game. Not sure he's going to want to take that to the air, but it...
Two schools that specialize in what?
Certainly has me looking at that game from a different view, I could tell you that. Let's go to Dion Clisso from PrepsKC.com. Hello, Dion. How are you?
Doing well. Doing well. So Marco probably has some issues based on where I know he went to high school.
Yeah. He doesn't like anyone in that game is the point there. Well, let's check out the Missouri players to watch, please. Let's start off with the center, quarterback, and running back.
Yeah, Joseph Vick is the quarterback, and Ja'Cory Juice Love, one of the best nicknames in the Metro, is a tailback. They are a dynamic duo, to say the least. Vick is a big, tall, lanky guy who can run and throw. Love is your classic tailback. Their offense is as dominant as anything. They're averaging about 50 points a game. They're going to Harrisonville this week. Center's undefeated, 5-0. Harrisonville's 2-3, but they've won their last two games after starting off pretty tough. Vic, if you get a chance to go watch the center play, Vic and Love are worth the price of admission. That's a really good football team all the way around, but those two guys are good enough to play on any team in the Metro. And just because they're a Class 4 team, don't think that they're not really talented players.
What about the Missouri game to watch, Green Valley at Belton?
Well, you know, Class 5 football in the Metro has looked a little weird this year. I think there's a lot of parity. Oak Park is 5-0. They're definitely at the top of the list right now, the way they're playing. Green Valley and Belton are in the same district, same conference. There's a decent chance these two teams are going to play each other again. Green Valley's playing really well, beat Blue Springs South last week. Belton's 3-2 as well. They're a tough physical team, just like Green Valley. These two programs really like and respect each other, very similar in how they play. They want to play physical. They want to play good defense. And it's always a good game. And you never know. We may get this one again because, along with Raytown, those are the top two, three teams in that district. And there's a decent possibility that teams will play again down the line.
How about the Sports Radio 810 game of the week, a game where Marco said he hopes both teams lose? That's not possible. St. Thomas Aquinas and Rockhurst.
Well, Rockhurst keeps marching on. They're 1-4, but I think the combined records of the teams they've lost to are like 23-4 or something like that. Aquinas got upended by St. James last week. St. James is... It's not a shocker because St. James is a two-time defending state champion, but they were 0-3 and had not looked great the first 3 weeks. We're getting better. Got out in front of Aquinas and kept them down. So, and Rock was, a player or two away from getting that game tied and who knows, maybe taking the lead. Jack Barrett, a great play for Miege last week to stop that at fourth down and one from the four. This is good. Don't want to lose another game here. This is a spot of your Rockers. You want to kick this off, and you've got to run here. They've got a really realistic chance if they win this game to win out, finish at 5-4, and be playing really good football. Aquinas, it's a cross-state line game, so it doesn't hurt you in the EKL, but they want to make sure they stay near the top of that 4A bracket that's got Miege and Chanute and those teams that look like they could go undefeated. Now Aquinas plays Miege here. I think it's next week or the week after, so they'll be able to take care of that head-to-head if they want to, but... Definitely neither one of these teams want to lose another week in a row.
What about the DePasquale Moore Metro matchup of the week? Mike's got this, and you've got this. Harmon and Wyandotte.
Well, Wyandotte's got one win this year over Schlegel. That's an improving team. Harmon, they haven't scored a point this year. They've not scored 281-1 or to nothing. The thing about Harmon is they didn't play in 2020. None of the KCK schools did. They played, I think, one or two games last year, and they had a kind of a COVID outbreak, and the administration just shut down their season, which was unfortunate. They were the only school in KCK to do that. They've got new administration this year, new AD, new coach, got about 70 kids out. They're taking their lumps, to say the least, but the fact that they've still got the same amount of kids, and we've checked in on them pretty much every week. The kids are there. They're playing hard for new coach Keith O'Neill. And they've got they're going to have another test here. Wyandotte's a really good team. They lost a close game to Sumner last week. They're an improving team under Coach Vaughn, their first-year head coach. So a good Meadowlark or, KCK Atchison League, if you don't know what the Meadowlark League is, a good league game and a chance for both these teams to improve.
Okay, so let's go over to the Kansas side, and we'll start with our player to watch. This is a player out of Shawnee Mission Northwest, but I'm going to let you tell me how to pronounce his name.
It's Malik Oatis, and I'll tell you, it took me a solid 3 months not to go Aotis, because as all of us in our age know, Amos mm-hmm. Otis and AO, and that just sticks in your head.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a player to watch. Last night they played. His team lost 56-49.
Damn.
To Latham West. That game was crazy. He had 411 yards and four touchdowns and four touchdown runs of 60 yards or more. He is an outstanding tailback for Shawnee Mission Northwest. He's also really good out of the backfield. Last year he had 1,000-yard rushing and 800 yards receiving. He's going to put up more than that this year. He's getting close to 1,000 yards rushing already, 5 weeks in. He is a dynamic guy out there. He's a senior. Shawnee Mission Northwest has got some good young players around him. There's a lot of sophomores playing for Shawnee Mission Northwest, so he's got a lot of young kids around him. And I would say if you can find a Shawnee Mission Northwest game, go to it. They can put points on the board, but they'll give up points. So it's an exciting game. He's as good a player there is. A couple weeks ago they played at Olathe North, and Olathe North was a better team, and go down and score. They have a 7-8 yard drive, and then he just break free. I mean, he can make you miss, and he can run through you. So he can do everything.
Okay, now this game we're going to talk about. We already had one Catholic school cross state matchup.
Wait a minute.
Oh, Stephen St. John, your St. Pius the X is venturing over to Johnson County to take on that St. James team that Dion was just telling us about. What about this matchup?
Well, I think this is a game that's going to be played. Talking to both sides, this is going to be a yearly fixture. Last year, St. James came in 0-4, gave St. Pius their only regular season loss pretty handily. Pius is coming off a loss to Chillicothe last week where they kind of got out physical a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
They barely beat Maryville the week before, and then they lost to Chillicothe. Now, Chillicothe is the team that's lost a couple games, but the funny thing about Chillicothe was is when you talk to everybody in that league going into the season, that's the team they talked about. So I wasn't stunned that Chillicothe beat St. Pius because Coach Simone had talked about Chillicothe and how good they were going to be, so they knew that. But, Pius is in a spot here where, a loss here doesn't hurt them, but I think they want to be able to kind of try and match St. James's physicality. And on defense, St. James is very physical. Their front seven is as good as anybody in the Metro. Wade Spence without sending defensive linemen. So this is going to be a big test for Pius, and St. James is looking to do what they did last year. They went 0-4 to start the season and went on, didn't lose again, and won a state championship. They went 0-3 to start the season this year. Beat Aquinas last week, which crossed off the list of since they joined the EKL. That's the last team they had yet to beat. They've beaten every team that was in the EKL when they joined, including Gardner and Mill Valley, who are now gone. So that was the last game they need to beat. It's going to be a good game. There's a lot of really good football players in this game, and I think both these programs really respect each other and get excited about playing this game.
I wish you'd tell us how to follow along with all the action, Dion.
Well, always at Twitter, at PrepsKC, and Facebook. Of course, PrepsKC.com, and you can download the PrepsKC app. And, of course, PrepsKC.com is total mobile-friendly. So all you have to do is, if you don't have the app, just go to your browser or your phone or wherever you're at and go to PrepsKC.com. We'll have, live scores from more than 60 games tonight, live stats from 25 or 30, depending on the games, and of course coverage of two dozen games tonight as well. So highlights and sound and everything you need to find. In fact, all day today we'll have all of our podcast previews that I'm loading in right now, and plenty of stuff to get you ready for tonight.
Dion, thanks for the time. We'll talk to you next week.
It's always fun, guys. Thanks.
That is Dion Clissow from PrepsKC.com. Back after this on WHB.